know, he just didn't know. We think he's crazy and we tell him so. Some people do it for the money, some people do it for the show.
I can put a few calls on at the same time, but this new telephone system doesn't allow more than a few.
I remember when you
that would be a good thing.
I remember when you used to have the callers run the program while you had to go out of the room for a necessary health break, and they'd all watch each other, the language, you know, and don't say that, Bob's not in the room, and. A lot of times I just thought you were doing, you know, like a bathroom run, but, you know, there's a lot of things to do in a radio station, so you're running around.
Oh, speaking of radio stations, this is WBAI in New York City.
Speaking of radio
stations. And perhaps you're on the air, or are we going to have trouble putting the phone on the air this morning? I expected that to happen. Oh, there don't seem to be. There doesn't seem to be any input. And hello,
Bob.
Ah, you're on the radio.
Oh, Bob.
Yes, it's Astro.
Yeah, it's Astro Kamchatka. I can't hear you though.
You can't hear me?
I gotta leave the radio on to hear you.
Now I hear you
over the phone.
We're on the radio. I mean,
yeah,
what's
now,
so strange about?
I couldn't
about...
hear you over my phone.
You can't what?
Now I can hear you over my phone. I couldn't hear you over my phone.
Uh-huh, I
now
see.
Now I can hear you with the connections there.
So how come you never call, Astro?
Well, you know, you were talking about putting people in jail for drugs. Well, you know, it's a funny thing. I think we should treat all these people the same way that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. got treated when he got caught with heroin. He was put in treatment there. The boy went through the treatment there. He got rid of the heroin habit there. And became a lawyer. He's in Riverkeep and he's doing good work down in Puerto Rico. So all these kids out there, because they don't have money, aren't given the same opportunity as Robert F. Kennedy Jr. maybe. And maybe they should be given that opportunity. They should be thrown in jail for years on end for smoking marijuana or use a little heroin when they're young and making mistakes.
Well, what should they do with people who are enticed by the police to sell guns and drugs for them?
Well, you know, tell you the truth, you see, when you got... When
Astro,
you got,
don't you always tell the truth?
Why
do you say to tell you the truth?
I
always think someone is telling me that they lie most of the time when they say that, Astro.
No, you know,
Richard Nixon used
to
say...
I know that, what he called,
there's
a lot of people there, and I don't know what to do, you know, about that, because you just got to stay away from it, I guess. It's the best thing you can do, you know. Stay away from the guns and the drugs. Because if you don't stay away from them, you get in trouble. But once you do get in trouble, you should be able to get a second or third chance there to rehabilitate your life there and do something useful and not be put in jail for 20 or 30 years for using amounts of marijuana or getting sick with heroin. You should be put in treatment. And as far as guns go...
It's a medical problem.
Social program in this country.
You're saying it's a medical problem, not a moral problem.
The drugs are a medical problem, but you got to realize why the people use drugs. People are using drugs because they're under such pressure there. They don't have housing where they can live at affordable rents. They work in two jobs. They're using beer and alcohol and drugs to alleviate the pain that they're suffering, the sporting wives and kids that are at their throat, and the wives working.
Astro, you know, maybe the greatest musician of the 20th century, Louis Armstrong.
He used marijuana, I know that. It was
right.
In the New York Times last Sunday.
Well, you know that story? I mean, do you think he did it because it was, because he wasn't having such a good time, or because it helped to inspire him in a certain way and to keep him healthy?
I read the story in the New York Times, and I think what it was he saw all of this segregation around the country there when Eisenhower was president of He made that statement in 1969, I read on the air the other night, a year after Martin Luther King was assassinated there, and the Black Power movement was coming in, and a lot of violence was happening, and his world was falling apart as far as that was concerned. But the idea is, he was also into this middle-class dream,
well,
like so many white people are.
And
they're under pressure, too, you know. And that middle-class dream
welfare,
the
Astro,
people are getting is nothing.
Astro, you know, according to Louis Armstrong, he got it from Mesro, and it was really important to his playing style. What's the story about the time that he was arrested?
He was shooting off a gun down there 4th of July when he was a kid.
No. He was, when he was
in... Orphanage.
No. When he was in, I think it was Louisiana, playing, he called Mesro in New York. And he said to him, you got to get us some help. We've been arrested. And Mesro said, wasn't for that, was it? He said, no, it wasn't for that. It was for being on the wrong side of town.
Yeah, it was.
And it was for being on the wrong side of town.
Yeah.
And that was wonderful. Send us some more.
Well, you know, Bob, like I say, I keep on emphasizing this point. They always blame the welfare of the poor people for being on welfare, but the majority of welfare goes to the rich people. Read the book, The Rape of the Taxpayer. And it tells you that. For instance, I'll give you a small instance of that.
A very small one, because there are an awful lot of other calls.
I'm going to give you a small instance of that.
Small.
Where you can see...
Just that, no,
that,
thank you. That's
let
enough.
Let me just hold on.
Oh, no, please. I'm full.
Glasses. Can you do that, Bob?
What's that?
I just want to grab my glasses over here. Hold on a minute.
Okay. I shouldn't be ragging you like this. I sound like some other broadcasters have been sounding lately. That's not really fair.
Listen,
but Astro, please keep it brief.
All right, listen.
Brief.
Gulf Oil, because Gulf uses tax loopholes to pay a tax of only 2.3% on $1 billion in profits. And how an oil and gas operator sold at least $50 million worth of oil over a 12-year period of time, and an annual income of more than $5.5 million, and yet paid no income tax for the entire 12 years. Now, that was in 1973. That's in the book, The Rape of the Taxpayer, by Philip M. Stern, Why You Should Pay More While the Rich Pay Less.
Astro, don't you believe in the American way?
I believe that the poor people are paying the taxes for the rich, and unless it's an equitable distribution of wealth in public housing, medical care, free college education, the whole system is going to collapse, because you're not going to have workers there to work in the service industry, in the restaurants, the hotels, in the hospitals. And the whole system's going to collapse, and that's what's happening now, because people are using drugs and alcohol, they're tired, they're burnt out. And the whole thing is collapsing around us. That's what's happening.
Oh, sorry. You're on the air. Hello? Hello?
You got the wrong radio show.
What could that be?
This just in. Do you know who Judas was?
There has been a change in management. I'm delighted to say that I've been named the interim station manager of WBAI.
Ushering in the year of the snake. We did do the surreptitious kind of activity.
You don't steal it after midnight.
Aimed at dividing in order to achieve
like
very narrow personal objectives. the circumstances that have plummeted us into this quagmire were manufactured.
What proof do you have?
In the case of Bernard White, the former program director, Mr. White has been terminated for cause. Mr. White's producer, Sharan Harper, also was terminated for cause. The former general manager, Valerie Bensler, was fired. This was a summary firing.
I want your resignation.
If you've been conditioned the way I have, I am superior to you. I know more than you do. Therefore, as I think, so should you.
If you try to stay in office now, it will only get worse.
Somebody or some groups of individuals are working very hard to try to steal the licenses of Christopher.
What proof do you have that we're conspiring?
It will all be made plain.
If you have any respect for the office, you will resign.
You have a right, even if you are ignorant of the facts, you have a right to be ignorant. Because we are listener-sponsored doesn't mean that we are listener-managed.
I want your resignation. I want your resignation.
Abandon ship. This is not a drill. Abandon ship. This is not a drill.
I have no intentions of jumping ship. I'll be going down with it.
Scene from Moby Dick.
There's a lot of creative people out there, Bob.
You're on the air.
Oh, God, I'm going to have a horrible nightmare after hearing that. Hi, this is the Cannibal, Bob.
Hi, Cannibal.
Hey.
Hi, we're standing in front of 120 Wall Street with about 18 people. And they all got quiet all of a sudden. Get louder. You don't get quiet. Get louder.
Are they in your apartment? I don't understand.
No. They're right in front of the ground floor of the building from where you are emanating from right now, Bob.
And 1:15 in the morning? A demonstration at 1:15 in the morning?
And we're just a bunch of wild and crazy guys! Yes, we are. We're here because you're there. And because John's there. And we wanted to show support. Curly is playing her horn. Keep playing, Curl. Okay. Hey, you guys. What's going on up there on the upper floor? Are you all feeling safe and secure with your security guards and your cameras and your interpersonal debacles? What's going on in my favorite radio station that brings me out here at this bloody hour?
Yeah, what is going on? I mean, what makes...
Who let the dogs out?
I know. Listen, call that dog over to the telephone.
Hey, Poochie.
Poochie.
Hey,
I want you to go out there and organize the other dogs.
Unfortunately, I think the other dogs have a better line of communication with each other than us listeners. And it's hard sometimes, Bob. It's real hard. I just wanted to get on the air quick and use the airwaves the way I've been trying to, the way we always used to use and feel comfortable in using. There's a remarkable spirit out here, and that little tape that played earlier kind of set the stage of what we've been enduring for the last 8 months. But there's smarter than we're led to believe. Listeners know what's been going on. And we're with 150 different staff people, whether you're paid or you're unpaid, whether you're in a union or not in a union, we're behind you. And we care and we're there for you. No better how we can help. And let's do elections for the local advisors. Because then we'll feel better about the end of it.
Cannibal, what did she do with the money? She certainly didn't spend it on lessons anyway.
I love it. Perfect.
It's just my crappy phone, John.
No,
she's playing beautifully.
That's good horn playing.
Hey, guys, I'm going to let you move on. We love you. And we love everybody there.
Does it remind you of early morning in the service, Reveille?
I love this program.
Bring back Robert! Bring back Robert!
You trees for coming to get you.
Oh, now, Beth, we're not coming to get her. We're coming to win her over. Good night, Bob.
Good night, you all. Wow. Oh, that's amazing. You're on the air. You're on the air.
Hello? Oh, yes, hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I arrived at night's been at the station for, what, 25, 30 years or something like that?
Well, somebody thinks it's too long.
Yeah, right. But did our imperial leaders give us any explanation for why he supposedly was fired?
Well, you know, there's some sort of an insane document that's been posted that said something about preparing his program at the last minute and dancing around the station. I mean,
dancing?
Well, Bob, you could be guilty as charged then.
Well, of course, I'm not sure what I'm going to do 5 minutes from now. I do it in response to what comes in and what happens in the room. That's the nature of this kind of radio, that it interacts and does something rather than comes in with something that's prepared. That's what live is. It's spontaneous. I wonder if that word is going to be allowed in this next millennium.
They want live dead radio. But maybe he was dancing to the wrong tune. At any rate, not one progressive organization has expressed support for the coup. In fact, the council, the Union Council, which I think is a group representing 20 or 30 unions, I'm not sure exactly the number, condemned it. The Amsterdam News has condemned it. And many other progressive people have condemned it. The only people that aren't condemning it are there's some people who call up the radio station and say and declare that she's the best thing since God knows what.
But what makes you think that she would want to have their endorsements?
Well, exactly the point. Well, you know, she probably would want to have their endorsements and then do what deeds they want to do anyway. As a matter of fact, there is still lip service to progressive left causes going on amongst a number of people at the station who I think at the right moment, when they're given the signal, the all clear, are going to abandon that type of programming. It seems that the outright blitzkrieg against the left has subsided somewhat. In fact, even Gary Knoll had stepped into that one or supported that one. And it's his programming. I don't know. Can I say this? Is this for Bolton now about expressing one's opinions about what one thinks is going on in other programs?
Well, the way I see it, Gary Knoll has been here a long time, and so it's quite all right for him to have an investigation. I've been here for longer than anybody, including Gary Knoll, who I put on the air for the first time. And I'm conducting my investigation.
Right, except that you're not in prime time.
Well, yes, but I'm certain that sooner or later the dissidents are going to bust up my computer. I mean, that's what they did to poor Gary Knoll, he said. How did he know that it was the dissidents who did it? Rather, I mean, why was he the one who got that
he knows
virus?
That.
I mean, and how does he know when the world doesn't know who sent that out? I mean, the whole world is looking for the authors of those particular viruses.
I think he knows
police
that.
Police forces all over the world. How does he know?
I think he knows that. For the same reason that when he began his the first day that he began his investigation, he prefaced it with his radio career and said that he's been at many stations And for one reason or another, when someone didn't like him or there was a coup and the time to go, there came a time to go, he just went with, and he didn't make any bones about it. He just went into the blue. And that was perfectly okay, and that's management.
That is the way of the commercial media.
Yes.
But in a radio station that's supported, paid for by a community, some of whose members have been doing it for 20 years, mm-hmm. you can't change it without, you know, a little input. And then when you're asked the results of a marathon, you say they're not going to be revealed because they're not the business of the listeners. I mean, what is the business of the listeners except to, you know, to listen and just send the money and then not ask how it's used?
The thing that's really galling is when you call up and make certain objections to the way things are going on, you may, depending upon the host, be called directly a racist. I guess Robert Knight was a racist too, even though he was black. You know, he just was against blacks because there is only one super black representing all the blacks, and she happens to be the interim. And you can't disagree because then you're a racist. Her key people are in positions now, and they're talking left, and at the right moment, they're going to drop that whole thing.
I expect them to be in here any minute, dragging us all out. You know, don't you think that you're...
It's happened before.
Yeah.
It's just outrageous. It's just totally outrageous. And, they got many $1,000 contributions during the marathon. But they never used to get that one after another.
Well, when am I going to get my share?
Oh, where is the money going for? Where is the accountability, by the way?
It's going to pay lawyers and to buy a $50,000 or $60,000 security system and to pay for $600 a night hotel rooms and for $90,000 salaries for some head of some other station. I mean, it's... I guess
it's just the new age, and we have to worship efficiency over spirituality and content. And
well, you know, let me say goodbye to you. Maybe I should say goodbye to everyone, actually, because I have a feeling that after this, I may not be here next week. I'm not even sure they'll allow you in, John.
Yeah. And it's strange to be doing and even speaking like that and looking over your shoulder while you're talking
around
into the microphone. Mm. Yeah, it's weird.
But don't criticize the way this is going, because if you do, you're a racist, you know. You don't criticize them.
Well,
they have the monopoly on goodness and anti-racism.
I'm a human racist, aren't you?
Well, we're terming it on Radio Free Air, and it's radio profiling that's going on here at WBAI.
You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I wanted to say a couple of things. Earl Caldwell is, I think, very left, and I don't think he's going to be switching over. Utrecht Lee had on Alton Maddox, which he's pretty left, black militant sort of politics, I would say. So I think there are some people within the current management, there's evidence there of a pretty far left thinking, but...
Well, may I say something?
Yeah.
I don't even consider myself a leftist. I don't think that left, right, and middle on a flat surface say anything at all about politics in this particular part of this millennium we're living in. I think that it's three-dimensional at the very least, and maybe four-dimensional. When I go out because there's going to be a nuclear facility built in my neighborhood, or when I don't like the air quality because of a power station in my neighborhood, the people who are organized may be, people who look like me. They may not be people who look like me. They may be skinheads. They may work on the job, but they all have to breathe the air and drink the water. And that's what this is really all about. You see, this is a resource that belongs not to the left. Maybe it belongs to listeners who want to hear a left perspective because it isn't given any kind of representation anywhere. But this is not a station of the left. It's a station for those who don't want to be left behind.
Well, I was reacting to the last caller who was point was the station is moving toward the right.
Well, it certainly it could be said to be doing that.
But I'm saying
if you call a certain kind of racism right wing, I would say that there is a certain amount of right wing crow Jimism going on around here at this station, if you know what I mean.
Okay, that's fair enough. I wanted to actually bring up a different point. Gary Knoll.
Go ahead. This is not let him talk.
Okay. Gary Knoll, in his last investigative report, I want to say something generally about Gary Knoll. He claims, oh, this is just going to be the facts. And you can tell that he has a definite slant, and he gets rather fired up and seems to be in definitely in a pro-management sympathy. His last investigation, he talked probably more himself than the guy he was interviewing.
Well, he at his last program, he spoke to Ralph Engelman,
right,
who is not enchanted with the current direction of the station, and he talked to Juan Gonzalez, who is organizing the anti-Pacifica campaign, what's it called, the boycott campaign. And I must say that...
Well, you got to respect that.
Well, I do certainly do respect it, but I don't... I thought that he was really much harder on Juan Gonzalez than he was on the other... people who have come closer to the management position, where he was talking about how lovely they were and quoting unconfirmed reports that even haven't even been reported to the police about threats to children. But, you know, I mean, he's taken these people at their word, and he is assuming that the dissidents have, sent worms into his computer. It sounds like he has come to this argument with a little bit of a prejudice. I mean, first of all, when he began his investigation, he said it was completed, and then someone pointed out that he hadn't even spoken to Bernard White. I mean, he hasn't spoken to me. I don't believe that he's spoken to Alambe.
But here's a question I want to ask you.
Yeah.
On his that last interview with Ralph Engelman.
Who are you, may I ask?
My name is Alex.
Alex?
From Manhattan.
Go ahead.
He seemed to be sympathetic to some of Ralph Engelman's views about that he didn't agree with an expansionist mentality, and he didn't agree with moving to the Wall Street location. So could you say that he had an element of being on the dissident side with that, with those remarks?
Well, I could say that there's a lot that went on before we moved to Wall Street that was left out. I mean, the reasons that we moved to this particular location, as I understand them, were that we were offered a contract for rent by a building that was set up to house foundations. tenants and to give them good rent deals. I don't think it's a great rent deal, but the price of the kind of real estate that we needed, at least in Manhattan, maybe it would be different in one of the outlying boroughs, but the price that we were offered for similar facilities in other places, you know, really, the search for a new location had been going on for 4 or 5 years, very unsuccessfully, and we came up against a final deadline when we had to be out of the place that we were in. We had to move. The contract was up. The landlord didn't want us to stay there. The landlord would only let us negotiate for a new lease under what were very unfavorable terms. So, you know, when a better deal was offered, you know, and there were no others, that's what happens, right? Do you ever look for an apartment and take what you didn't like because right. The other alternatives were worse?
But how about the fact that of him making putting out the concept that the greater overheads have put on some greater pressures, and that he's not liking of this the expansionist mentality of increasing the listenership, that he would rather stay on a smaller scale if it could. I mean, right.
Look.
Now there are overheads you have to deal with now.
I don't understand that. When you say expansionist, do you mean that there shouldn't be a larger audience for the kind of things that we're doing? Or that in order to expand, you have to, dumb down the programming? I don't believe that. I don't believe that is necessary. I think that there are millions of people who maybe don't know about what's broadcast on this station, and it's just a question of reaching out in the proper way to reach them. Because, I am a witness to tremendous, explosive expansion of the station. There was a time when this station, WBAI, instead of being at the bottom of the ratings, was number one or number two all of 24 hours on FM. So, from number one or number two to number one or number two is, quite a drop. Now, how to get out of that is what I say. And I say that you get out of that not by becoming more like Opie and Anthony, but by becoming less like Opie and Anthony, because that's what people are hungry for.
So you don't see the concept of a lot of expansion and increasing the listenership as being in one of these camps?
You know, Lou Hill, whose name I'm sure you have heard. Hello?
Yes, I've heard that name.
Who is Lou?
But I couldn't tell you. There rings a bell.
He was the guy who got the dream of having this foundation while he was in a conscientious objector camp.
Oh, this is the founder.
That's right, the founder, right.
Okay.
And he said, in a crisis, you must expand. Now, I believe that. I don't know whether it means expand into the internet, expand into television, video. I don't know whether it means make better equipment, get more reporters out into the field. But I've been thinking of ways, creative ways. The only way to deal with a crisis is to treat it as an opportunity. And I think that is something that both sides in this battle can agree on.
What is Juan Gonzalez's view on that?
I don't know whether he has a view on that, because that's not a question that I heard Gary Null ask him.
Right.
He asked him, you know, questions about the newspaper he worked on, I believe. You know, he didn't ask about why Juan Gonzalez was outraged at the way Democracy Now! Was being treated. He didn't ask him questions about, you know, anything about except Juan's motives, which I don't think are really, you know, that far from mine. You know, I want to see this station heal the breach. I want to see people who are, you know, creative, courageous journalists given an opportunity. I don't consider myself a journalist. You know, I'm a rumor monger, you know, but I know a journalist when I see one, and I respect them. And as far as I'm concerned, Amy Goodman is the most courageous journalist in the United States, if not the world. So I'm very upset at the way she's been treated, too. I agree with him on that.
So it was interesting that even though she has the national program, she does not believe in this rule about three stations voting for a national program, that it should then be imposed on all five stations. That was what Susan Wong had said.
Well, you know, I would say that if there was a program that fulfilled the mission and the definition of what a Pacifica program ought to be, it is Democracy Now!, programming about human rights, about people like Laurie Berenson, about places like the report that Robert Knight made on Tulia about...
I just said an Ivory Coast chocolate report in advance of the New York Times.
What's that?
You just did a good report on the chocolate industry, the cocoa industry in the Ivory Coast, with allegations of child labor, and that was in advance of the New York Times story.
That was on Democracy Now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, see. My problem with Democracy Now! Is that it's on early in the morning when all decent people are asleep. I would like to see Democracy Now! Repeated a few times during the day. I like the idea that it's available on a website, though. I think that's wonderful. I'm beginning to feel that you're kind of setting me up, that you support the dissidents and that you're asking me these questions just so they can be answered. Is that true?
No. I have been schooled by you on some things. You know.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. You're in trouble.
I've got one for you.
Okay, let's hear it.
Let's see.
Last time, because there are a lot of other calls.
Okay. I called up Earl Caldwell, and he's always going off about the Post and the Daily News. And I was curious as to what he thought of the Amsterdam News. And I said, what is your opinion of the Amsterdam News? And he used that quote, there is no there there. Hello? And
there is no there.
This was his answer. He didn't want to get into it. He didn't like that question. And his answer was, there is no there there.
Did he ever write for the Amsterdam News?
I'm not sure about that. He was either.
Did the Amsterdam News ever pick up any of his reports?
I don't know about it. He did not have any further mention of the Amsterdam News. But I didn't know if he was reacting to my question having no there there, or if he was, saying that the Amsterdam News had no there there.
Well, you have to ask him what he meant by that.
I guess so.
Yeah, I don't catch up with his program that often. Anyway, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Bye. You're on the radio. Hello.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. I have three points on my agenda. I would like to express them and see what you will allow me to say. Okay?
Well, I remember that you did a wonderful performance.
I hope I do another one now.
Of something from
Henry V.
Shakespeare. Henry V.
Yes.
And
I would like to say that you're about this. Here's what my agenda is about the singer, about the documentarian, and about Sybil Wong.
Who is the singer?
On your guest.
Oh, Peter Jameson.
Yes, he's fantastic. I enjoyed his interpretation of a Rolling Stone enormously. It was very intelligently set, so to speak. I also have a question about
He's a wonderful instrumentalist.
Yeah, fantastic.
And so is John D'Amato, who is playing with him.
Oh, there is a second guitar. I wasn't quite sure.
It's a guitar and a mandolin.
Ah, I see. In order to do a song like that of a living composer, does one have to get their permission, or do they present them with the song, or do they pay ASCAP? Or how does that work? Or can they just do it because it's a folk song and it's public domain?
Well, it depends upon where it's being done.
Oh.
You know, if it's being done onto a recording or on a television program,
right,
then there are royalties to be paid.
Uh-huh.
But if it's on a radio, right, if there's a radio program like this.
Is this a radio program?
Who gives a crap then, right?
I see.
Okay. Peter, do you have an answer for that?
I was actually marveling at the facilities where the radio station, where you have to run down the hall to go to the bathroom here. So, there's no...
Yes, and you have to know at least two combinations.
And I had to have someone stand outside and wait for me to open the door so I could get back in.
Yes, and then someone has to go and turn the security camera on in the men's room.
We monitored you here.
Oh, thank you.
We followed your every move in the hall.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's right. You can see me in the...
Now, about the documentarian.
We want to commend you for washing your hands.
Thank you.
Because many people,
Well, you know what Carlin's remark is? It wasn't dirty when it went in there, so I...
Now, about the documentarian, the young woman who's making the film about Larry David.
Yes, he's out of the room for the moment.
He?
Yeah, well, there are two people here.
Oh, I see. I thought I heard a young woman's voice. I almost went into tears.
I'm sure that women cry in your ears all the time.
No. Here on the program. Anyhow, what I would like to say about that is I would like to send some money, a small contribution, a senior citizen contribution, to help toward the production of that movie, because I have a feeling it's going to be a success as a dramatic, statement about Larry Davis. Is there any way of doing that? Giving me a phone number or is there an address, of the film company itself, the production company?
Black Pearl Productions, yes. Right?
Black Pearl?
Yeah.
Really? You have an address?
Yes. You can send it to Troy Reed.
Just a moment. Go ahead. Where?
Troy Reed.
Troy Reed, R-E-I-D?
R-E-E-D.
Uh-huh.
At 27...
Yeah.
DePew, DePew.
DePew, right?
Street.
Right.
Huntington.
Huntington, New York.
Yes.
Yeah.
117.
Yeah.
43.
43. And who do I make the check out to? To Troy Reed?
Troy Reed.
Okay, thank you very much. I will do that. Now, Bob, one more thing. This is a very touchy subject, right?
I don't know whether I'm permitted to allow you to solicit money for the production of a film.
I'm not trying to do that. I'm trying to send money myself.
Well, it's one of those things. I've always thought it was a good thing to do, but I think there's some obscure regulation that they're going to drum up and fire me because I just file it.
I don't think so. No, that's too minor. Now, what they may drum up and try to fire you is what I'm almost about to bring up.
Oh, well, then don't do it.
No, so that's why I want to present it to you first. I would like to quote a remark that Sybil Wong made during the second interview that Gary Null had, the third interview as part of his series. Can I do that since it was publicized before 250,000 people at noon? There are probably that many number of people now who didn't hear the radio at noon. And it's a very important point.
Well, let's hear it.
Okay. She said that about 5 years ago, the Pacifica board, she was a former member of the board, changed the bylaws by them, undemocratically was the word she used, in order for them to self-select the board. So I contend that that's where the Gordian knot lies, which has to be untied to somehow get to the resolution of this thing. Then this week he had a professor of communications from some local college.
That's Ralph Engelman, who was once a member of the board of directors.
The board, right, exactly. He was saying that Utrecht Lead should graciously step aside. Now, my suggestion is put Juan Gonzalez in. That's who they wanted in the first place, and he didn't accept it because of his father's illness. And that's all I wanted to say.
No, I didn't know that. I don't think you're right.
No. That was Jose Santiago.
Jose Santiago.
The news director here was off.
Oh, I said Juan Gonzalez.
Juan Gonzalez was not off at that.
Jose Santiago, excuse me. I mean, that's not as bad as Paul Viriento calling Santiago Nieves Jose during one of their breaks. They were both.
Everybody makes mistakes.
I know.
That's just one of Paul's mistakes.
I know. Now. Thank you very much for allowing me to say that, and that is all I have to say, and I'm very pleased that you allowed me to say that.
Thank you, bye.
Thank you, bye.
Hi, you're on the radio.
Hi, Bob. Hi, everybody on the radio tonight.
Hi.
This is Patty, and I just wanted to say, you know, maybe there's a lot of people out there that think we're just crackpots or bitter or something, that, you know, things are changing and we don't like it, but if I may take a moment to explain to people that might not know, there are 4 lawsuits pending against the Pacifica Foundation. One being granted standing to sue by the Attorney General of California, Mr. Lockyer, giving the listeners standing to sue for violation of trust and the bylaws. And that suit also asks for voting rights for the listener sponsors to more ensure the safety of the network in the upcoming age that we're going towards, which is from the digital broadcasting and the 1996 Telecommunications Act and all the rest of it. You know, we're under lots of pressure. So that's one suit. There are 3 others. There's one by all the local advisory boards, 18 members from the local advisory boards. And that's 18 more plaintiffs. There's 12 on the listeners, 18 on the local advisory board. And then we have 2 more suits, one by 2 members of the national board that they filed last September against the Pacifica board because they can't, they're violating their fiduciary responsibilities, and the dissident board members, there's 5 of them, can't get anything done. They can't, and they're being held liable by the courts as well for not being able to follow their fiduciary responsibilities as a board member. And then you have a 3rd one, which is a cross complaint by 3 more national board members. And these are also complaining about the same thing, and all of them want to roll back the bylaws change to 1999 or 1997, 1999 being when they did become self-selecting unanimously by self-selecting local advisory board members that were elected to the national board. Once they got there, they severed their ties through this vote and became the self-selecting national board that we have trouble with now. So if anybody just thinks we're crackpots or bitter or something, that's not the case at all. We have good, if you believe in the law, we have good reasons to be angry. The listener sponsors have been abused for the whole time. They've been not told what was happening through gag rules and everything. And we think that it's time that the listener sponsors also will become voting members with possibilities to elect our national board and give us standing and give the voting and to support the station over 60 or 70,000 votes that will control the network rather than 20 or 15 or 10.
You know, the question about voting that always occurs to me is how do you prevent, we have a certain number of listeners. But someone like Bob Grant has many, many more listeners. Well, how do you prevent people who would want something like Bob Grant on WBAI from influencing an election?
Well, that's somewhat taken care of because there is actually an elections committee that's been working on this and made an 18-page elections proposal that discusses just these things. And one of the things is you vote, is that the 18 or the 22 board members are voted over a 3-year period. So you only switch over 6 at a time or so. That's one thing. The part of it is built into the Pacifica mission of Lou Hill, which must be followed. I mean, that's our mission. And so, you know, and there's recall by the local advisor. You know, we can recall the people, too, if they're not doing what we want. So there are many things in place to prevent a takeover.
But wait. You know, this is a collective noun.
Right, we, yes, right.
So who is part of the collective?
Of which collective? We as the on the station?
Who are the people who would get to vote?
Well, that's all being worked out. I mean, there are...
So, in other words, this is a process that you're working on now, and that there are... And somebody gave me something about elections. The thing that I liked best about it was that it said this is just a draft, and that there was lots of room in it for people to write other ideas.
Right.
I think it's got to be worked out. People have got to accommodate each other's fears.
Well, we have to accommodate fears, but the one thing that cannot be compromised is how to protect the network from being taken over by a small group of people again.
Absolutely.
No matter what small group of people it is, even if we know their names and love them today, it doesn't make any difference. And that's the issue that, you know... Yes, it is a draft.
Well, look, what I'm really trying to say is when we first began our programming against the United States' participation in an undeclared war in Vietnam,
right?
People were very outspoken, but there were many, many more people who supported the war, despite the reasons that we had. And if we'd taken a vote, I mean, even among our listeners, people would say, hey, wait a minute, first of all, if you attack the War Department, the State Department is going to call the FCC and WBAI will lose its license, and we won't get to hear
Abraham Egg.
Or the UFO show, or whatever it is. So, this is a very complicated problem that has to be worked out, and I would recommend by something like, that's akin to a bicameral legislature where the listeners have a certain amount of power, and they share power with the producers, and they share power with the board of directors, who are, overseeing or trying to receive input from all of the other sources and work it out.
Well,
I think it's not a simple problem, but it's definitely something that can be worked out if everybody wants to.
Well, that's the question right there.
And I must say that there are stations in the country that have votes for their boards of directors.
That's correct.
And, I'm sure that they have examined this problem and have worked out ways of dealing with it.
Well, there are some that work as a collective, like WORT, and I believe in Madison, Wisconsin, where the only people that get to vote are people that have volunteered their time. There are other ones where they do elect the local advisory board. It's not a local advisory board because that's a CPB guideline that we have an advisory board only and not a local control board or a station board that actually makes more of the decisions. And, in fact, the elections don't just include the listeners. It includes staff people, too. It's not saying the listeners are going to take this over and control everything. It's not true. But there has to be, in my opinion, as a listener who has been paying for many, many years, as many, many people are, who were like hoodwinked for many, many years and had no say. There's no accountability. You go to a board meeting and they laugh at you or mock you or ignore you. You know, this is not the way to treat people that have that you know bought the space that the broadcasters sit in, and that people that are honored to sit as a local advisory board member as self-perpetuating, unaccountable. We need accountability, structural changes that are going to change the network, that are going to preserve it. And that is not about taking it over. It's about preserving it. I mean, you say, okay, we have to worry about Bob Grant, or we have to worry about these things. What's worse than we have right now? It could be a little worse than you could be gone, and then it's going to be worse. But what's worse than we have right now? I mean, what are we going to do? Sit and live by democratic centralism the rest of our lives, or worse, you know, where people are not, you know, like, because somebody knows best? Somebody knew best, and this is where we are. I think it's better.
Let me ask you a question, okay?
Uh-huh.
Who would you rather have dinner with? Howard Stern or Al Goldstein?
That's no choice.
Now, all of these people have big followings.
Yeah, but we don't care about big followings. We care about the mission of Pacifica.
Suppose that they claimed that they were voiceless on Pacifica.
That's not true, though, and that there's recall for all that stuff.
Suppose there were some presidential candidate who was ideologue or a Father Coughlin or a hater.
You can't have a political platform on the station like that, of some political person running like that. I know we had one a couple of times, but they went away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are all, of course, you know.
These are all questions.
We can be afraid the rest of our lives about democracy, can't we? We can be afraid about voting, can't we? But I don't see anything. I don't see any choice. What are we going to have? 5 people or 10 people decide what's best for us, go out into the community and reach out to one small group to nominate 4 new people?
The important thing about democracy, as far as I'm concerned, is that everybody recognizes that it's not perfect.
Of course it's not.
And that it's got to constantly be massaged.
Yes, it does.
And that when you have an opposition, you permit them to be the loyal opposition. But by letting them in the tent and letting them have their say over the medium, rather than gagging them and getting rid of them. My father, actually, used to say, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still.
That's right.
And that seems to be the attitude that we've run into in this one, that the dissident voices have been banned and fired and shut up, and there have been innuendos and maybe lies told about them.
Of course there have.
And that it seems to me this is the wrong direction for this organization. Wouldn't you say that, Brian?
Bob, I think almost what your show is doing, it should be report from the listeners. And I understand out in Berkeley now that the listeners actually have an hour where they can go on and vent. Because they could be the canary in the mine. They're on every week saying, this is wrong, that's wrong. We don't have to wait till we get to the crisis that we're in right now.
We don't even have a program where the management deigns to talk to the listeners and tries to explain what's going on.
Oh, yes, you do. Every once in a while they come into shows.
Well, no, they will interrupt a show and take umbrage at something that's said, sometimes not the thing you'd expect them to be upset about. But
yes, but let's be fair about this. This is, since I've been a listener, that's gone on. There was never a consistent report to the listener. And isn't one now? And the listeners were ignored then too. But one thing to say about the local advisory board in KPFA in Berkeley was elected last October, the first election of a local advisory board in the history of Pacifica. And it's not perfect, but it's much better because now they have that program.
Right.
Now they've elected two listeners onto the programming council, that there's an integration into the culture of, you know, of what is really sometimes stagnation and exclusivity.
Speaking of stagnation and exclusivity, this is WBAI in New York City.
That's right. Well,
I'm going to go on to another call unless you have something
fine. Thank you, Bob, for your time, and thanks to everybody.
Thank you for all of your times and your efforts, too.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye. You're on the air.